live from Burbank, California, where I'm still trying to pitch my What's Happening reunion script. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now, his people will not return my calls. Mark Maron.
Thanks, Jim. Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, pain sponges and need machines, and all those that have this strange cold flu thing. I don't know what it is.
Enablers.
I don't know what it is now. I don't know the difference between a cold and a flu. Do you? They just seem to have melded together, because what I have, it feels bad. I had a bad night. I'm not going to sit here and whine about it. There's a lot of people that are worse off than me. Many people.
No.
But I had an uncomfortable evening of tossing and turning and coughing and sneezing. I'm a commercial now. And I had some Zyban or whatever it's called. Something. I don't know.
Osculatorum? Osculatorum?
Stop it, man. Osculatorum. The hell with that stuff. It's just candy. It's just, you know what, though? I'll tell you something. I'm not on board with the homeopathic cures. I made some soup. Someone on the blog said the reason chicken soup is good is if you let it get lukewarm, it actually develops a bacteria on it that is similar to penicillin. So what you got to do is you got to cook your soup, then leave it out to maybe get a film on it. Yeah, and that's the best time to eat soup, really, when it gets the film on it. That's a mixture of kind of remaining chicken fat and
spoiled meat.
But now they're going to take that personally. No, I don't know. I had some soup. Usually I find that eventually when it comes, you just got to wait it out. Got a great show today. Svetlana, our hooker / movie reviewer / cultural critic, is going to be on to talk about The Da Vinci Code. Robert Greenfield, he just wrote a biography of Timothy Leary. That should be good. He's a very interesting, enigmatic, mythic figure of 60s counterculture that he was in the game for like 30 years, dude, doing the Timothy Leary thing, but kind of an ass, apparently. I went to his eulogy, by the way. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
I was up in San Francisco. Jack Boulware called me and said he was going to this eulogy, and Ram Dass was there and laid out some words, and Robert Anton Wilson was there, and that guy, that computer guy, who's the guy that used to write for the Grateful Dead, and then he became a computer wizard? I can't remember the, because I know Robert Hunter wrote for a lot of the Dead, but then there was this other cat. You know, I have got to stop not knowing the names of people on this damn radio.
About.
You do know who I'm talking about?
Bill Gates.
No, it's some other guy, and I can't remember his name. And yesterday I said Dave Berg instead of Nicholas Berg. I can get the information. We've got plenty of time. We're producing the damn show during the day. All right. Bobby Ghosh will be here from Time Magazine. He's the Baghdad bureau chief, so we can get to the bottom of some things. What a day, though. Zarqawi dead, and Tom DeLay resigns.
Yeah.
What a great day. You know what was awesome, though? In Congress, in the House there, the Democrats tried to keep pushing him up to later in the night. They really wanted him to give his resignation speech like by himself at 1 in the morning, but he came around the side and did it during some sort of committee presentation on the floor. They weren't going to let him take the floor, and he did that horrendous,
still powerful,
insidious ass. Yeah, well, you know, he powerful, but it should have been in all the papers. It wasn't even on the front page of the Yahoo News. It was on the Drudge Report briefly, but even in the mainstream press, it just kind of went away. I mean, this is Tom DeLay resigning. Do you realize how long we've been waiting for that? I mean, I knew he was done, but I mean, he went on the floor of the House and did it. He did it. He said, "I'm out. I'm done. I'm a corrupt ass. I represent the culture of corruption that has taken over this institution." And I'm gone. He didn't say that, of course.
No,
I'm putting words in his mouth.
He just promulgated partisan politics. That's all he did.
He promulgated partisan politics. He said partisan politics are good because if you don't have them, you have tyranny. That's what he said, that if you don't have partisanship, you have tyranny, which might be true if it weren't a tyrant saying it, I think. What do you think?
I'm just more concerned about the Three Gorges Dam.
Squire Brothers are going to be here later. Do you know those guys?
Man, you just glossed over the Three Gorges Dam thing.
The Three Gorges Dam? I'm sorry. Go ahead. I just wanted to finish my intro. What's going on with the Three Gorges
Dam? Probably
the
world's largest dam.
It's about to break?
No. It was just set up in China.
Uh-huh.
Destroyed the environment all around it.
Yeah.
And displaced millions of people in China.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a huge environmental disaster. Where'd that go on the front page? Nah.
Listen, Buzzkill Earl, I understand there's an environmental problem in China, but the Speaker of the House resigned, and terrorist mastermind Abu Abdullah al-Zarqawi is dead. And you know what? I'm starting to think maybe I should be a little paranoid. I'm sad about the dam in China. I'm sad about it. I don't know much about it, And maybe, you know what I'm starting to realize about people like you?
What's that? What, like me? What do you mean? What do you mean like me? Define like me.
Like you, Buzzkill Jones?
Buzzkill Jones?
That you? Do you really have a way that it should be? I mean, what would you be like if everything was okay?
You know what? If everything were okay, you'd know what happened to the sea manatee today.
What happened?
You don't even know, do you?
Was it in Florida?
In Florida? Well, of course, that's the only place they are.
What happened?
Did
they take them off the license plate?
They took them off the endangered list. They're trying to do that. They're trying to permanently. No.
That's not a good thing.
No, because conservatives try to do that so people won't think they're endangered anymore and they won't want to protect them anymore. It's a bunch of baloney. And you should know about that. I know Zakawi is important, but
well, I leave this to you. The environmental things are your things. I want you to do that. You don't have to take them out to hit me over the head with them. You present them and say, "This is my concern today." You don't have to say, "Ha ha 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 ha." You know, that's not the way it has to go. I'm glad you informed me. I wanted to talk a little bit about the. I know that the war doesn't bother you that much because of the dam in China, but I did want to talk about this U.S. Army First Lieutenant Aaron Watata, who is saying, "Screw you, I'm not going to go," and he's been in the forces, and he might have a legal case. I watched this guy, Glenn Beck. I'll tell you, being sick makes you watch television. I never listened to Glenn Beck when he was on the radio. Now he's on Headline News. He is a insidious little boyish hate machine. I have never ever seen anybody as a kind of like he's trying to be cute and evil at the same time. He's like cute evil guy, and he gets this guy's dad on the phone. He gets the dad of U.S. Army First Lieutenant Aaron Watata, who is saying that I will not go to Iraq, although I'm in the Army. I'm willing to take the hit. I'm willing to go to jail for 2 years. I'm willing to take a court martial because this is an illegal war. It's an illegal war for a lot of reasons. And those reasons can be proved with the Nuremberg trial. I mean, it is an illegal war for committing a crime against the peace in Iraq by starting an aggressive war. It's an illegal war because of war crimes. It's an illegal war because of crimes against humanity. And not only that, it's based on a series of lies. There is a legal case, and no one's ever really done this before, to try to make a legal case to take the U.S. government to task on breaking the laws, the international laws, the Nuremberg laws. Now, the Nuremberg Charter. Now, Glenn Beck's got the guy's dad on the phone and says, "Will you take money from Cindy Sheehan to pay for this defense?" And the father's like, "I don't know. I don't know." It's like, "Will you take money from the anti-war movement as a donation?" This is the guy's dad in Hawaii. He's got bigger problems. Shouldn't have got on the damn show. But I wish I could have responded. It's like, he's got a case. He's got a case. There is a case against this war to be had. We got a legal case. It's very exciting if it actually goes to court and he tries to do this. Just symbolically, if anything, it's very exciting. We will be back with Bobby Ghosh, who's in London. He's the Baghdad Bureau Chief of Time Magazine.
And now he's giving his best 60%, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. I didn't do the short order news. I'll do it after this segment. So I just forgot. I got worked up, and that's the way it goes. There's certainly no shortage of news coming out of Iraq. I'm glad our guest could take some time to talk to us on the phone from London. It's Time Magazine's Baghdad Bureau Chief, Bobby Ghosh, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, Bobby Ghosh. I'm sorry. I'm horrible with names. Now, let's just start with al-Zarqawi. He's dead. Will it ultimately, make a difference to the insurgency?
It will make a difference in the short and medium term because not only have they lost a commander, an inspirational figure, they've also lost the man who was their number one source for money. He was the reason why jihadis around the world sent money to Iraq. He was the reason why jihadis around the world came to Iraq to join his holy war.
Yeah.
So they're going to lose that for a little bit. Eventually they'll regroup and find somebody else, but for a while they'll lie low.
Okay, so now he was ratted out by his own people, so I have to figure he had overreached somehow. Is that the sense that you get?
That is definitely the sense I get. I think in recent months he had brought more and more Iraqis into his organization. Before that, it had been essentially foreigners, Arabs from other parts of the world. When he brought more and more Iraqis in, I think U.S. And Iraqi intelligence agencies were able to infiltrate the organization for the first time. And that is good news, because for years the Americans have lacked human intelligence in the insurgency.
So that's interesting. So once he started recruiting Iraqis to be suicide bombers and to, because I'm assuming that's what he brought to this insurgency, is using local guys to blow themselves up, that he became easily traceable.
Yes, I think in the end that's what finally gave him away. While his group was essentially foreigners, they were a tight band, they were suspicious of all outsiders, including other Iraqis, and they looked out for each other's back. The moment he began to allow Iraqis in, the group got loose.
It's interesting, because it seems that American forces have similar problems with Iraqis in their ranks.
Yes, exactly. That is exactly correct, and particularly because the U.S. forces have had to recruit Iraqi insurgents, Iraqi militia members into the Iraqi police and army, and we've heard over and over again that they have been giving intelligence to the insurgents.
Now let's talk about these militias. Let's talk about the militias within the police force, the Jamaat or some of these Shia militias that are out there, just killing Sunnis whenever they can. Has there been any a lessening of that problem?
Well, they now have a new minister. The new interior minister comes from a non-partisan background, unlike his predecessor. So all eyes are on him. His appointment was announced only yesterday. We'll have to see whether he is the clean broom that the interior ministry needs. The interior ministry runs the police forces and a number of other paramilitaries, and those are the ones that have been responsible for the targeting of Sunnis. If the new minister is able to curb that, that'll make a big difference. I personally wouldn't hold my breath, because that ministry is so thoroughly infiltrated that it would take the strength of a Hercules to clean it up.
Well, it seems to me also that, how much of an alliance is there between the Shia religious leaders in Iraq and the leaders, in Iran, and then also the more secular Iraqi leaders who are also Shia? Is that a reality?
Well, most of the Shia Islamist parties, and they make up the largest chunk of parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them owe substantially to the Iranians. Their leadership lived in Iran during the time of exile, and many of them have very close ties to the mullahs who run Tehran. So their loyalties definitely are divided. They would be, I guess, less than forthcoming towards American efforts to stamp out Iranian influence in Iraq.
Well, so given the tenuous relationship on a nuclear standoff level with Iran now and the United States, this would seem like this entire region is destined for a very frightening instability, even more so than now.
Well, that is the direction in which it is headed. Zarqawi's death was one correctional step, but it'll take several more before we can say that Iraq is not on the slippery slide. At the moment, even though Zarqawi's death is something to be welcomed, there are bigger problems that continue to drag Iraq down.
Well, let's talk about some of those problems. It seems sure to me that some Marines are going to be charged with murder in what is being called the Haditha massacre. And there are currently two investigations or three going on with that particular event, and there are other investigations going on as well into other events revolving around American forces who have transgressed. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Well, we're waiting to hear on the Haditha investigations, and those should be, from what we understand, the investigation is complete. We're just waiting for the report. Some members of Congress have been given a sneak peek, and what they've had to say is not reassuring. It would appear, from what those congressmen have said, that some Marines were guilty of going on a rampage in this town after one of their own had been killed.
Yeah.
I should emphasize, though, that this is not big news in Iraq.
Sure.
It is big news in the U.S. and elsewhere in the world, but in Iraq, the military behaving badly is just par for the course. They're used to their own soldiers behaving badly. They don't have any greater expectations of the Americans.
Well, it's interesting to me, Bobby Ghosh, Time Magazine bureau chief in Baghdad, talking to us from London. It's interesting to me that that I've talked to a couple of reporters, and they said that civilian deaths, you know, by the U.S. military and otherwise are common, that it happens all the time, and that the fact that this one is being investigated because of the nature of it and the cover-up is really only surprising here. And I don't even know how surprising it is here.
Well, it's like this. Soldiers behaving badly and killing civilians is a dog bites man story in Iraq. Soldiers being held to justice, being punished for that kind of activity, that is a man bites dog story, because that almost never happens in Iraq. So if the Americans do this right, if the investigation yields a report that is transparent, that is credible, if soldiers are brought to justice, then that'll show the Iraqis that the Americans hold themselves to a higher standard than Saddam Hussein's army did. And that's very important. That's the difference between the good guys and the bad guys in this case.
But wouldn't that require a move up the chain of command for prosecution? It seems like, you know, granted these guys were guilty of murder, but the very nature of guerrilla warfare and insurgent warfare is that they are left to their own devices, and the command structure is fragmented, and nobody is overseeing this.
Well, yes, that's what the other investigation is about. It's to find out who knew how much and how far up the chain of command and what kind of a cover-up took place.
Okay.
If that report suggests that senior officers were involved at least in the cover-up, then it's very important that those officers be brought to justice.
Well, I hope that happens. I mean, some people from our camp over here, we would like to see Rumsfeld charged.
Well, there are a lot of Iraqis who would agree with that, too.
I read recently that women are being mistreated publicly for not honoring some elements of Sharia law. Is Iraq becoming a theocracy?
Well, there are some parts of Iraq that certainly are, and those are the parts of Iraq that are controlled by people like Zarqawi. The vast majority of Iraqis are moderate Muslims. Iraq, until recently, was one of the most moderate Muslim countries, and women have high positions in government and in public life. It would be a shame to see Iraq go down the way of Iran and Afghanistan. I know that most Iraqis don't want it to happen that way. And again, the killing of Zarqawi is a step in the right direction in that regard, too.
Well, I certainly appreciate you being with us, Bobby Ghosh. It was great talking to you.
Anytime.
Okay, take care.
Good night.
Good night. That was Bobby Ghosh, Time Magazine, Baghdad bureau chief, talking to us from London with always a grim forecast. Let me tell you, usually we used to talk to Mick Ware a lot, but when you talk to a guy who's been on the ground and sees what's really happening there, and this is outside of whatever the hell America thinks they're achieving, this administration thinks they're achieving, just the social dynamics of this war are just heinous. They're heinous. So let's talk about psychedelia. You want to, again?
Sure, man. I'm tripping right now.
All right. We got Robert Greenfield coming in here to talk about his biography of Timothy Leary in just a second.
Best toupee in the business. Mark Maron.
Why do you say that? We're tripping, man. In honor of our guest, in a minute, we're going to bring Robert Greenfield out. We're going to talk about Timothy Leary. Right now, it's time to get the people informed and up to speed, because I didn't do it before. So here's the first edition of the Mark Maron Show Short Order News. Governor Rick Perry of Texas has announced a $5 million plan to install hundreds of live video night vision internet cameras on private land along the Mexican border, so that anyone with a computer who spots illegal immigrants trying to slip across can report it on a toll-free hotline. The website is not expected to do well because the immigrants are running so fast you can't masturbate to them. All right. The site of Adolf Hitler's bunker was marked publicly for the first time Thursday by a historical group. Many fear the marking of the spot will attract neo-Nazis who will make pilgrimages to the marker. Hitler tourism will inevitably lead to the opening of Hitler's bunker and breakfasts and Nazi berry farm sort of atmosphere kind of thing. Maybe. No. A woman eating at a Burger King restaurant in The Hague, Netherlands, found a live frog in her salad. The frog was supposed to be shipped to an Amsterdam Burger King where they are licked for their hallucinogenic properties. The frogs are served with fries and a drink in what is called the really, really dude seriously happy meal. And that's a short order news for today. And a fine joke to lead into our guest. Robert Greenfield is a former associate editor of the London Bureau of Rolling Stone magazine. He is the author of STP, A Journey Through America with the Rolling Stones, The Spiritual Supermarket, An Account of Gurus Gone Public in America, Bill Graham Presents, My Life Inside Rock and Out, and Dark Star, an oral biography of Jerry Garcia, as well as a couple of novels. His latest book takes on another 60s icon, probably one that had the most cultural relevance, Timothy Leary. Robert Greenfield is here with us now. Thanks for coming in, man.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, you know, I saw the Garcia thing. I'm like, how am I not going to talk about Jerry for an hour? We had Weir on the show last week, and it was kind of funny. I made him laugh, and I was very excited about that.
Well, Weir is in the Timothy Leary book as well, because the Dead went up to see Timothy Leary at Millbrook.
Millbrook. Okay, so let's start at the beginning, because I read the Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. Now, I'm 42 years old. My recollections of Leary are very young, but I remember seeing him in magazines. I remember seeing him on TV. I remember an image of him on a white horse for some reason. Yeah. But I remember being fascinated with this guy, because he was a larger-than-life figure. Now, he was on an academic trajectory.
Tim ingested magic mushrooms in Cuernavaca in 1960. He was at that time already teaching at Harvard. He was an instructor in the psychology department. He'd gotten his PhD at the University of California, Berkeley. He'd had kind of a nervous breakdown at this point already. His wife, Marianne, had committed suicide on Tim's 35th birthday. He had two young kids. He was having an affair with another woman. And he kind of left Berkeley, went to Spain, kind of fell apart, but then was hired to teach at Harvard. He was a very democratic with a small D kind of psychologist. He wanted to, and did some really groundbreaking research. He wanted to change the patient-therapist relationship. He was considered possible heir to Abraham Maslow and was very anti-drug. There were other people who were doing research into psychedelics. Frank Baron was investigating the use of psilocybin in terms of creativity. And Tim thought it was all nonsense, and this is the essence of the 60s. Until he took the trip.
Until he went with Oslo stuff, right?
Well,
whose acid did he take? Where did he get it?
Well, it's interesting. He didn't begin with acid. He began with psilocybin, which he got from the Sandoz laboratories. Now, Sandoz is the Swiss pharmaceutical company for which Albert Hofmann synthesized the 25th compound of LSD, known as LSD-25.
Right.
But most of Tim's research at Harvard and most of the people he turned on while he was at Harvard, Allen Ginsberg, Dizzy Gillespie, Thelonious Monk, the poet Charles Olson, on and on and on, the cultural elite of America, the poet Robert Lowell, this was all with psilocybin.
Now, let's talk about cultural setting right now. What is happening in the country that's enabling this? Because it seems to me that if it were another time, if there wasn't this schism between the old generation and the new generation, that he wouldn't be embarking on this type of stuff.
Well, this actually precedes all that.
What year is it?
60.
Okay.
This is the 50s. See, what no one understands is the early 60s are not truly what are thought of as the 60s. When Tim is doing all this, America is still straight. And the beatnik thing, through Ginsberg, Tim turns on Kerouac. And Kerouac says to him, "Coach, walking on water wasn't built in a day."
Yeah.
Meaning you can't take this experience and consider it enlightenment. You're going to have to work for it.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
That's not what Tim thought.
No, that's interesting. So he thought that the cathartic experience was bang, and that's it. You see it, and Kerouac said, "You're going to have to commit to this thing."
Well, you're going to have to work it. See, mm-hmm. and Tim believed, and it was listen,
now, work it to use it,
right? To make it real,
right?
To change the world,
right?
Tim thought that the power of the experience itself was transformative, and he was into consciousness expansion. All of these things seem so hopeless now, you know what I mean? It's so long ago. But at that point, the world was so straight, America was so straight, that when people had their minds blown, literally, and he did then progress to acid, to answer your question, when the psilocybin supply stopped.
Well, I don't think consciousness expansion, it seems dated. It just seems the method they were trying was primitive. That it seems to me that some of Leary's prophecy in terms of what we're capable of in terms of communication and expanding our tentacles mentally has happened, only it's technological.
Of course, the difference with Tim was he experimented on himself.
Yeah.
He wasn't doing, quote-unquote, controlled research.
Yeah.
He was doing uncontrolled research.
Right.
But Sigmund Freud did the same thing.
What happened? What was some bad stuff that happened?
Well, he got arrested constantly. I mean, he became so controversial so quickly. The first major incident was he was on his way to Mexico with the woman he was living with from Millbrook and his two children.
Now, she was a rich woman. Like an heir of some kind, Millbrook, right?
No, he was with somebody there then, but he was with a woman named Rosemary Woodruff at this point, who was not wealthy, but was very beautiful. Tim always attracted very beautiful women. And they actually got busted for smuggling dope into Mexico, which is almost impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was so shocking for a Harvard professor to be arrested with his two children in possession of marijuana and sent to jail. And then Tim, of course, he was so Irish. He so loved to defy authority that instead of just like taking some kind of a suspended sentence or paying a fine, he fought the case in court saying it was his religious right to get high. And now you've got it. Now the 60s are... Now we're in.
That was the birth of it in a way, symbolically.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so, because what he said was the old way's not working, this is the new way. And listen, to his credit, he was 45 at this point. There was no one of his generation who was relating to people 25 and under.
Mm.
And that's why he was seized upon as a leader, a guru, and a teacher.
Well, it was interesting to me when I read the book Raging Bulls and Easy Riders, the film book, that there was something going on in culture that, you know, when they actually made that shift to the 60s, is that the older generation had no idea.
No clue.
Had to talk to the kids at all.
No clue.
Not in entertainment, not in as a parent, not in any way. So these guys found this hole and redefined the whole game for about 30 years.
And Tim was on the cutting edge of it for a long time. But you know what happens in America? Once it gets on the street, it explodes.
Yeah.
And he soon was chasing the culture. Because by the time you get, and Jerry Garcia is the one who talked about this, he said to me, you know, it was all over by 66, man.
Because Speed came in, right?
Summer of Love, where everybody thinks it started. Everybody real had already gotten out of the hate. Now you've got acid chemists. Now you've got people taking mega doses of this stuff. You got people freaking out, bad trips. And Tim is kind of trying to keep pace with this, but the genie is out of the bottle.
Sure. And once the genie gets out of the bottle, that means law enforcement can shut it.
Well, it becomes a mania.
Yeah.
LSD becomes a threat to the government of the United States. Tim continually gets busted. I mean, the life is extraordinary. They put him in prison in San Luis Obispo. He escapes through the help of the Brotherhood of Eternal Love,
and the Weathermen, right?
Well, yes, the Orange County.
Mark Rudd was on the show telling us about that.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
The Weather Underground spirits him out of the country. They give him a set of fake IDs, and he chooses to go to Algeria to be in exile with Eldridge Cleaver, who then puts him under house arrest for using too much acid, for being out of control. Tim's the only guy who could get busted in a revolutionary state for being out of control, okay?
That's awesome.
So he then escapes from Algeria. He's on the run. He goes to Switzerland. And he actually gets kidnapped, literally, in Afghanistan, brought back to America. And he does a lot of heavy jail time.
My God. I can't even stand going to Mexico. It always has amazed me, like, where these people travel like this. Because it's not easy to travel. At that time, where, you know, he's going to these revolutionary countries and he's, you know, running from the law, it must have been incredibly difficult.
You know, it's almost impossible to understand how different the world was back then.
Yeah.
This is 1970, and he was accepted in Algeria as a black revolutionary. Mm. They thought he was a black revolutionary.
How the hell is that possible?
Because nobody knew what...
That's good acid.
He's
giving it to everybody.
I guess. Listen, if you want to start with his previous life, I mean, Tim was a cadet at West Point.
Wow.
Who was silenced for violating the honor code. He smuggled 2 quarts of whiskey on a train returning from a football game. Everybody got drunk. He was asked questions. They didn't like his answers. He spent a year there with nobody talking to him.
So he really was a guy that was, to his core, an iconoclast that actually found a window through which to have a real freedom for himself.
I think so.
And what he was able to do with that freedom was define a culture, whether it was right or wrong, or whether it was other people could handle it or not. He was in Tim Leary's zone, and he stayed there.
When Tim came to live in L.A., he spent the last 15 years of his life in L.A., Jack Nicholson said of him, not sure I can use the exact quote here. It's got the F word in it, but I can walk around
that. We can bleep it.
No, well, Jack Nicholson said of Tim Leary, he's been everywhere, he's done everything, and he's slept with everyone.
Right.
And Tim becomes at that point someone who's famous for having been famous. He lived his life in the headlines for 40 years. And I think the most interesting thing about him is that he's so Zelig-like.
Yeah, that clearly.
He's born in the year that radio is invented. And after he dies, his ashes are shot into space along with those of Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek.
Awesome. We are talking to Robert Greenfield. The book is Timothy Leary, a biography. We're going to talk to him some more in just a second. We'll talk about Tim's dying in public, about some proto-hippie reaction to the book, and also his legacy. Stay with us. Open our hands and
the bridge of sight.
Now he's lost control of his borders, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Our guest is Robert Greenfield. The book is Timothy Leary, A Biography. I went to his eulogy service for some reason. My friend Jack Boulware is a writer up in San Francisco. It was at that church. It was in San
Universalist Church.
You were there, right?
No.
Oh.
But there were services in L.A., San Francisco.
Right. Yeah. Robert Anton Wilson spoke, and Ram Dass was there. Mm-hmm. And that guy who used to write Dead songs and made a fortune in the computer.
John Perry Barlow.
There you go.
Those people are interviewed in the book.
Yeah. They all spoke. He did take his death pretty public to the point where he said he was going to do himself in on the Internet.
I think one of the most extraordinary things he did was the public act of dying, which is he wanted to tell people you can take back your own death. You don't have to die in a controlled circumstance. You don't have to die with a doctor by your side medicating you beyond consciousness. And, you know, he always was extraordinarily beautiful physically, and he wasted away in full view of the world and also did mad things. I mean, he used to post his daily drug use on his website.
I remember seeing it. I go there.
And the daily drug use was fairly extraordinary.
Yeah, yeah, for a guy his age, huh?
Well,
for anybody.
For anybody.
Yeah, I guess you're right, yeah. So it's interesting that he made that public, and his old partner, Ram Dass, who has made a life out of caring for people.
Well, it's interesting because Ram Dass began caring for Tim. As Ram Dass says, all he ever wanted to be was Tim's Jewish mother, but even he couldn't control him.
Right, but at the end he did come around?
You know, everybody who knew Tim, because Tim forgave everybody, I think everybody forgave Tim, and people at his death, virtually everybody came back to say goodbye.
Okay, but some people seemingly are not willing to forgive you.
Well,
what's going on with the reaction to this book?
I've been getting some grief, you know.
Yeah, like what?
Well, people who haven't yet read the book but have read the reviews and the pre-publication reviews. You know, I think it's something that if you had lived through the 60s, you would have understood, as Bob Dylan once said, don't follow leaders, watch your park and meters, that you can get a very valid message from a very flawed messenger, and that the cult of personality will always take you down in America.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people are very defensive about Tim. I think they wanted him portrayed as the perfect guru. The man had some issues.
Now, let's talk about his legacy in terms of, like, I got to be honest with you. I tried to read some of those texts he wrote later in life on, what was it, meta-psychology.
Exo-psychology.
I could not get through four pages. I mean, did he leave us anything?
The book is about his life. I mean, Oscar Wilde said, you know, I've put my genius into my life rather than my work. I feel that Tim's life is what caused the change in society.
Yeah.
I feel it's the way he lived. He broke all the rules. He defied authority. I think he helped end the 50s almost single-handedly. I think I've left it for someone else to try to analyze the work.
And then Charles Manson ended the 60s almost single-handedly with the help of
the
press.
Well, you make an interesting point, because when they returned Tim to Folsom Prison and put him in the darkest belly of the beast in the solitary, 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 the guy in the next cell said to him, you know, Tim, I've been waiting a long time for you to come here. And it was Manson.
Get out of here. What did they talk about?
Charlie said to Tim, what's that thing you see, you know, man? You know, when you're really on ass, you're really high, you know? And Tim said, it's the light. It's the way. And he said, no, man, it's nothing. It's death. I mean, these are the two parameters of the acid.
Yin and the yang, the good and the evil of the acid experience. Sitting there having a jam, like, through the cell block.
Passing each other notes and
really?
Listen, you can't make this up. No one could make this life up. This is beyond fiction.
That is unbelievable. Now, I got to talk to you about Garcia briefly.
Please.
Because I know that whatever happened in, what was it, 1965 at the Shipbuilders Union Building, is that where it happened? The first acid test?
The Longshoreman's Hall.
The Longshoreman's Hall, right across from the place they used to put us up when we played at Cobb's in Fisherman's Wharf.
I love it.
Now, was that, how much did Leary mentor Garcia?
Well, not at all, because, see, the great thing about Leary is he was the East Coast. Millbrook, these are the academics who were using
that's
acid.
That was the greatest scene in Italy when Kesey shows up for more acid.
And they can't talk to one another. And see, but Jerry comes from Kesey. Jerry is a Kesey,
okay.
Neil Cassidy
prankster,
actor.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the insanity of the West Coast and the uptightness of the East Coast, even on acid.
Yeah. To me, that was it. An electrical light acid test when Kesey shows up just to, like, say, hey, Tim, man, you got any acid? And he's like, dude, don't bother us. We're doing yoga.
That's right. We've been into a serious meditation. And just to link everything together,
yeah,
to put all my books together, it's at that acid test where Bill Graham is trying to organize it and present the show.
Yeah.
And everybody is so stoned on acid, except for Bill, that somebody has broken Garcia's guitar. It's like shattered.
Yeah.
And they can't find Garcia because he's tripping and walking around the hall.
Yeah.
So they put up on the light show, Jerry Garcia, please come to the stage. And Bill is holding the broken handle. And Garcia's reaction is, gee, what a sweet guy. He's trying to put my guitar together. Bill just wants to get the show on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the two of them were really close and loved each other because Garcia met him in this acid moment.
Oh, really? So that was
Bill
it?
Was trying to put together Jerry's guitar.
I'll be honest with you, Robert Greenfield, that you know, some of the moments that I've had, guys who I've met on drugs.
Hello.
I mean, they those relationships, when they happened like that, have held.
Of course, the problem in the 60s was what you imprint on psychedelics is so absolute that it becomes non-negotiable. It's like, I've seen the truth, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's a tough thing to deal with. Sometimes you have.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe you saw something else.
Yeah, I guess it's... I try to talk myself out of certain perception-bending paranoia that I get occasionally.
Of course,
now.
What we could all say is there's certainly some people in society right now who could use a dose.
Yeah, I just so you could see them act like that.
Just so maybe they could see there's something else than their own narrow reality?
Do you think that ultimately that there is a gift to acid? I mean, you know, from your own investigation?
You know, what Tim said is it's all about set and setting. And what people don't realize now is that the context of the 60s is gone.
Right.
And Bill Tim's book, The Psychedelic Experience,
yeah.
John Lennon talked about this. Yeah. It kind of prescribed the trip you were supposed to have. Back then, people were looking for a mystical experience. What it would be like taking it now in this society?
That would be weird.
I can't. Thank you.
What are you going to go to the mall?
Shop?
Yeah, yeah. Shopping? What are you going to do?
You could watch Bush on television.
Yeah, you could play video games. You got to go outside, man. Listen to us. It's like, you got to get a couple good friends, go outside. During the day, preferably, man. Not that nighttime tripping.
I think people take it today to recreate the 60s. I mean,
the context is gone.
I took mushrooms at the Halloween parade in San Francisco once at night, and I almost died. It was too weird, man. Too weird.
It's funny how old hippies like to talk about their drug trips. Huh? Why is that?
Yeah,
it's like their war stories? Is that what it is?
I don't know. Sometimes they're the best times of your life.
There you go.
You know? All right. So the book is Timothy Leary, a biography. Our guest has been Robert Greenfield. It was great talking to you, man.
My pleasure, man.
And by the time this airs tonight, your reading will have been done, but I hope it goes well.
Thank you so much.
I'm gonna go see it.
Okay.
I think, if I feel up to it.
Okay.
Take care.
My pleasure.
Now he's got about 33 staples in his head. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. It's not true. And I'm not wearing...
Everything I say on this is absolutely true.
And I'm not wearing a wig either. I don't have a...
Best toupee in the business.
All right. My friends, I have known the Sklar brothers since they started doing comedy at their bar mitzvah.
Thank you.
And quite honestly, I wasn't very nice to them initially, and I want to apologize.
You had every right not to be nice to us. We were terrible. We were unfunny.
We weren't worthy of being nice, too.
Here they are, Randy and Jason Sklar, are, of course, touring comics, and you may have seen them on many TV shows. You'd remember. They're identical twins. They now host Cheap Seats without Ron Parker on ESPN. So, fellas, when is that show on?
Fourth season just started last Monday, and then they re-aired again on Thursday.
And we should let people know it's on ESPN Classic, which is about 1/100th of the viewership of ESPN.
Oh, no bitterness.
It's not about 1/100th of the viewership of Air America.
What? But we've got to take it back. Like, you know, guys, you're a couple of liberal Jewish guys. You got to start slow, taking back sports from the right wing.
And the right wing.
How did the right wing get? How did Rush Limbaugh get on NFL Tonight?
It's ridiculous.
I don't understand.
Here's who's liberal in sports: Jim Lampley, and us.
And that's it.
That's it.
Keith Olbermann.
He's not even in sports.
sports anymore,
but
and he's liberal.
I feel like, yeah, we need to take it. It's not a right-wing thing, but these jockeys.
There was a time when the intelligentsia was so into boxing.
Sure.
Like, you know, George Plimpton, Norman Mailer were at all the boxing. And they got bullfighting, too, in the 60s, I think, was very popular
bull
with the...
Bullfighting troubles me in some way because they stick that thing in the back of
they
the shoulder.
Them.
But it's basically if you were to stab someone in the arm and then say, I would like to arm wrestle you. It's not a fair fight for the bull.
And it's not a sport. No, there's no winning. The bull cannot win.
No.
It's stacked against the bull.
No,
now, I got to be honest with you, fellas.
Yes.
I'm not programmed towards sports.
It's
I've never been able to watch them. I watch them. I've said before, I watch them like some women watch them. I'm like, he hit it. It doesn't matter what team. I'm like, hey!
No,
you know.
Fine.
But I don't know, how'd you guys get into it? You were just brought up with it? Your dad? What happened?
I just, growing up, we played a lot of sports.
We grew up in the Midwest, in St. Louis, and sports was sort of a big part of
it. Like the St. Louis culture. Cardinals sort of baseball sort of ruled over everything. So you kind of have this culture that supports it.
Yeah.
And yet, it was weird because it was more of a culture that wasn't so driven towards like this sort of meatheadishness. I feel like even the fans, because we've always feel this way, and this is the same way about our show on Cheap Seats. If you're a sports nerd, you could be talking about like how someone laid down a perfect sacrifice bond. If you just replace some of the terms, you could be two nerds talking about comic books or Star Trek or whatever.
Yeah.
So we kind of love and tap into that, the sort of sports nerdiness of things, as opposed to
we don't watch the macho thing, regular sports. We watch on our show Scrabble tournaments,
spelling bees, and
that's compelling because you know that
you,
when those guys start sweating, you know.
Well, it got we
the
watched
Scrabble what, tournament
throwing pieces
tile fight tile piles
that reach into the tile bag. Is always a little bit
moment. It's
gonna promiscuous.
Happen.
It's somewhat marred with
but
sexuality.
But I actually think one of the smartest rips on Bush came during our Scrabble episode.
Really?
Because the announcer said, as a guy looked at his rack of tiles, the announcer said,
he's looking at his rack, looking at his rack and drawing a blank.
And we said, I wonder who else is looking at a rack and drawing a blank.
Oh.
George Bush up on the screen.
A pun in context. It's very funny.
Punny.
Come on.
So, now wait. Now, you guys are like, as I said, I just want people to understand, you're identical twins.
Yes.
Now, growing up as sports, was there ever this sort of like, we'll take Randy and...
That is so bad. Jay's like just waiting off on the side.
Did that happen?
No,
it actually didn't.
It has not.
Because we were all both like at the equal level of kind of suckiness. Like we didn't play in like, you know, regular like college sports or something. We played like in a 5'9 and under intramural basketball league where like we were sort of like the giant towers at 5'8.5.
I like tennis.
Tennis is fun.
Great. Yeah, I mean, tennis seems... my brother played tennis. I can watch that. That's more of my speed.
Tennis is...
How about the World Cup? Do you understand it? Is there like 900 teams?
There are 32 teams in the World Cup,
and none of them supported the war.
Right. So, thank you.
Actually, that's interesting.
There are 32 teams. It's very political.
It is?
Soccer is very political.
How so?
I just feel like because people have nothing to live for in Ghana.
Oh, so it means everything. I see. It's like, you know, when you live in a totalitarian tyranny
or a banana republic,
it's like the soccer team is the only thing that people can rally
about. The Ivory Coast this year has a team that made it. And only 32 teams out of all the countries in the world. And in order to, when they made the World Cup, there was a ceasefire there. So basically, making the World Cup brought the whole country together.
Yeah, but four people were killed at the game.
Absolutely. People are going to be trampled at the game. They figure out a way to then trample their people is at the game. And they say they did it all for the love of the sport.
Why do you think that? Now, I know this conversation has been had, and I saw it had last night, as a matter of fact. Why don't Americans like soccer? Is it too... What is it? Not enough points? What?
I think that's a big part of it. There's not enough scoring. There's not enough hot chicks running around the field on the outside.
Why don't they get some of that going? It wouldn't seem to be much.
I think they should. Soccer hotties.
You can't really cheerlead for soccer, though.
But it's also a global sport, and there's hundreds of teams, but you'd think they could get a league going. They tried, didn't they?
They did try. There is a league, the MLS, and it's good. And the United States is getting better, but I think that's another part of it. Like, Americans like stuff that
sucked.
We can dominate.
We've sucked for so long.
It's hard to say, like, oh, great,
but
now we're going to get whooped by Poland.
I feel like we have to win the World Cup this year because the World Baseball Classic was this year and the United States wasn't even in the top four.
Yeah, I understand that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we are losing control. In basketball, basketball is like the United States.
In the Olympics,
we got a bronze medal. So, I mean, like, we have to win in soccer in order to save face.
I understand that, you know, because I think that's one of the reasons I was never into sports, because I was never taught the healthy competitive engagement thing.
Right.
Because to me, losing is so mortifying that I'd rather quit than lose.
It's like gambling.
Isn't that horrible?
It is.
That's a horrible character trait.
Rather quit than lose.
What a horrible character trait. That is like, I can't believe I admitted that. I'm
ashamed.
I like
that you admitted it. I feel like I wish George Bush would adopt that. I'd rather quit than lose.
So now, what am I going to ask you right now? I got to have something in my head. I just had it and it went away because I'm a little ill.
Wait. So this is what you said.
Oh, the sparks. That's what I was going to talk to you about. Because like a lot of times we get preempted by the sparks. We were preempted by the Clippers. This used to be a sports station. They have outstanding sports contracts.
But you know it's bad when you're preempted by the sparks.
But on some level, we talked about it. Who are the Sparks fans?
Lesbian women who love Katie Lang.
Okay, so really, progressive talk radio.
Let me correct that. Lesbian women who are Katie Lang.
That's basically
who it is. They support this state. They would like the same, so why can't...
So it makes sense.
It makes sense that they...
have the sparks on.
This is one-stop shopping for lesbian women.
Well, yeah.
By the way, this year, the Lakers and the Clippers were in the playoffs for the first time.
Which
in a
is
long
a freak
time.
Thing,
Because
right?
the Clippers have just blown for like
They've
so long.
They've been terrible.
So this year, they actually had a good team, and we were kind of like, as we were thinking, like, who are the L.A. Like, where did the fans sign a line?
It would have
up?
Been a town divided.
It was a town divided. So you could go by businesses to decide, like, who would... So, basically, like, Gelson's...
Yeah.
Lakers.
Really?
Trader Joe's?
Clippers.
See, a little more economical. Barney's?
Yeah.
Lakers.
Ross
Dress for Less?
Clippers.
You know the answer.
Oh,
so, there you
Ross
go.
Dress for Less.
What's wrong with Ross Dress?
Nothing. I just think they should put underneath the sign, humility available here. I've gone there, and I never feel good about myself, though I always walk out with a shirt and some socks.
For a dollar.
Yeah.
Have you ever been there when someone tried to return the humility?
Dude.
At the customer
service
takes
forever. And they return, like, a stack of stuff. It's a day.
I like, yeah. These are regularly shaped socks and my humility.
Yeah, here you go. But people, like, I literally think that some people, like, buy a bunch of stuff for nothing, and then they try it all on, they wear it at home for 2 minutes, and then they come back and they return it in stacks.
That's right. There's their mistake. They should take it to, like, Buffalo Exchange or to some, like, hip,
which,
by the way, Buffalo Exchange, where you can sell clothes,
it's like a thrift store.
I saw, who's it? Mena Savari.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to sell back clothes at Buffalo Exchange, which I was like, don't you have someone who can do that for you?
Who is she? What has she done lately?
She did have some swag in there that she was trying to sell back.
Yeah,
Sundance hat. Sundance bag. Like, who's going
to... Some people just like to do that. I don't like the thrift store thing because I finally had this awakening when I was shopping at the thrift store where you walk out of the thrift store and you're like, why am I covered in grime?
You do feel dirty.
You know, like there's like a film on you. And I'm not saying it's bad necessarily, but I don't think it washes out, really.
It does not wash out. It comes part
And in L.A., if you buy, like, you can...
If you're selling back your clothes in L.A., it feels like you're auditioning your clothes for them.
Yes, because there's the guy at the
this
thing.
Is a great shirt. He's like, we're going to go in a different direction. We're going to go in a different... At the end of the day, it's the best of what it could be.
I do, you know what I do now, honestly?
What?
Goodwill. None of the selling.
Good
I just take
you.
It right over to Goodwill. I throw everything. Goodwill. Machines, toasters, everything.
I throw everything in out of the closet is my big place.
Oh, good for you. Good for you.
Out of the closet.
Yeah, that helps.
The key to out of the closet is like I would like. Don't you want your stuff to like actually appear in the? I want my stuff to appear in the window of out of the closet. That's when you know you've made it. Like you have something that they'll actually put there.
That's how you know that gay people like you.
Exactly. Yes. I was like, how far do I have to go? I had a baby. I was just going to give her and see if she would make the window.
Just see if she can make the window.
Now your baby's going to be one tomorrow.
1 year old.
And that's why you have to run out here.
That's right.
Well, thanks for being with us, guys.
Thank
so,
you.
See, it's on ESPN
Classic. Monday nights at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, cheap seats.
Randy and Jason Sklar, thanks a lot. We'll see you again.
Thanks for having
cool.
us.
Cool. We'll come back with Svetlana.
He's the father of modern urinalysis, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
That's a historical tidbit. Here with us tonight, folks, is our entertainment correspondent. She's not so new to Hollywood, but new enough, but she's an old hand at entertaining. She works as a prostitute here in town. Welcome, Svetlana Maximus.
Too much blow last night, Mark. You sound horrible.
Come on. I know. I'm sick.
You melted your sinuses.
No, I'm sick.
It's horrible.
No.
I don't buy it. I can see the blood.
No, it's the old days. I'm not doing any blow.
Studio 54.
With
a mesh tank top. I know you.
Oh, yeah. That was me. That was back in the old days. Back in the day. So how have you been?
I've been fantastic. Speaking of Studio 54, I just just got back from New York.
Nice.
I was there for a week. It's such a sexual city, right?
Yeah.
The hormones are practically oozing out of the sidewalk.
Oh, yeah.
I was walking down Canal Street, two rats copulating broad daylight.
Nice.
Unbelievable. It's like real, but not. But no, without the song.
Why were you in New York?
Well, it is a very important occasion. There's a big party Al Gore was having for his documentary Inconvenient Truth.
Oh, yeah.
You've heard of it, right?
I saw it.
You have?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. And he asked to come to entertain some guests and support. And I'll be honest, Mark.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go because Al's parties are always so boring.
Really?
Nobody wants to have sex. They just want to play word games.
Oh, yeah.
Half an hour they're discussing Will Shorts. You know him. Such an ugly nebbish I've never seen in my life.
Yeah.
No wonder he's making career crossword puzzles, I'm telling you. But Al had a very important movie, and since I'm a big supporter of keeping this country cold and functioning, I decided to go help promote, and I promised him I'd bring every influential person I know to see
now,
the movie.
Now, is he a nice guy, Al Gore?
He's okay, got great facial profile.
Yes, he does.
I mean, in the movie, if you remember, there were about 50 shots of him staring into space sinking. You know, those sinking shots.
Yeah.
And they were very effective.
Yeah.
Mostly because he has fabulous nose and great complexion.
Yeah, very
really
good.
Pleasant skin tone. It makes you listen.
Yes.
You know, think of Edward James Olmos. Could not promote global warming.
No.
The gaping holes in his cheeks.
No. And a lot of graphs in the movie. A lot of, like, and it starts down here and whoa.
Lots of, like, and elevators and fuzzy animation. Animation not so crazy about.
Yeah.
The frogs. Use real frog.
It was cute.
I don't like. But, you know, this man has passion. Where was his passion a few years ago? I don't know. But better late than never.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe not, though. Instead of ruling the free world, you're making little movies about temperature. So maybe it's not, you know, I don't know. What can I tell you?
Anyway,
the point of the movie is, Mark, the crap has hit the fan.
Yes.
And if we don't act soon, everything is going to melt.
Right.
Now, I have to say, there were a few weird things. Maybe I'm nitpicking. Is that how you say it?
Nitpicking.
Because besides the cheesy animation, he did a good job. But he did say at one point, he said, the ice caps are melting. The glaciers.
Yeah.
And any more melting and New York City will be flooded. Now, how did he emphasize this? He said the World Trade Center Memorial would be underwater. Now, do you remember this?
Yes, I saw it.
This is important monument, precious to many people, but it is now a gaping hole.
Yes.
It's not an effective deterrent for people. You tell the buildings are gone. If you say Macy's will be underwater, then they start reciting.
Well, that's interesting. And now with all this controversy around Ann Coulter with the World Trade Center widows.
I would say whore, but you know what? That's the pot calling the teapot.
No, it would be demeaning to your profession to call her
a whore. Yes, I would use another word, but let's not. Yeah, I'm telling you. I'll give you a secret, Mark.
Yeah.
Client. She would never admit it, but for years she would nudge me. I'm lonely. I don't feel sexual. She had this little donkey mask she liked to wear.
Oh.
It drove me crazy. The sounds she would make so shrill. I wanted to smack her.
I think she has an eating disorder.
She looks like a...
A man. Does she have a penis? Tell me the truth. Does she have a penis?
It's a little one.
Yeah.
It's some sort of anthropomorphic... I don't know. Androgynous...
Hermaphroditic.
Hermaphrodite.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Ann Coulter. Excuse me. I didn't mean to say that.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's take it back.
Yeah,
but anyway, the point is, all lunatic bashing aside, this is a very important movie to see, and I've already taken several clients to see it. And the good thing is, Mark, they give practical tips to save the planet.
Yeah.
I don't remember what they are. Something like use scooters.
Scooters.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Stop mining coal in your yard.
And don't let the glaciers in your living room melt or something.
Yeah, try to keep those glaciers cold.
I have to say, so I'm planning on throwing away my Chevy Impala and my Ford Crown Vic and buying a cheap Japanese vehicle.
Yeah, one of those small ones.
I have to give away the velour padding and the dice, but that's the price you pay.
Is that going
to
hurt your business?
Possibly. A lot goes on. Japanese vehicle, they're small men and small devices. It's easier in a Hyundai.
You might be able to draw a whole new clientele with a Prius. You know, I mean, you might get a new sort of environmental friendly clientele.
Vegans, they smell like garlic and tofu. I can't handle this.
Yeah, but you could grow your hair out again and you wouldn't have to shave.
That could be fun, actually.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of waxing.
Uh-huh.
But I don't even recycle my water bottles. Mark, I'm horrible.
Okay,
I'm horrible.
All right. Well, that's too bad.
But I have to tell you, this week in New York was not all fun and games.
Okay.
As my father always taught me, Svetlana, a day without suffering is not worth living.
I follow that.
In accordance with that, I went to see Da Vinci Code.
Okay.
Horrible.
Yeah, I had no idea what it was talking about.
And I'm not saying satanic because I don't agree with his views on the church. Of course Jesus had lover. Of course they had kids. He's Jewish.
Yeah.
You know these guys. Yeah. They stoop like rabbits. They have 66 children. Yeah. Jesus won't have a few toddlers.
Yeah.
Come on.
A lot.
Come on.
Sure.
The point is, this movie is crap, and I'm not telling you anything new.
No.
I should have known better. You know. Now, I'm not a big reader, Mark. I'm not. I'm more of a visual, tactile person.
Yeah,
it's my profession.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not time
touch someone.
Reveal shorts, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But 2 years ago, when I got the gift basket from the NRA, they had the Da Vinci Code inside right by the pork rinds. Yeah. And I said, you know, okay, why not? Yeah. Read it. So I fired up the barbecue. And I saw that, and I read the whole thing in less than 2 hours. The most imbecilic writing I've ever experienced. Let me give you an example.
Sure.
This is how he creates suspense. Yes?
Okay, here we go.
Langdon opens the door. He could not believe what he saw. Dot, 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 end of chapter.
That's it?
This is the suspense.
And
next chapter. Here we go.
Right, okay.
She asked him a question. He answered. She could not believe what the answer was. It was so shocking, she was shocked. Dot, 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 end of chapter.
No, it's awful.
And you want to turn the page? No, you want to burn the book.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. But Ian McKellen, huh?
Ian McKellen, genre of fantastic, and the guy with the great ass, I forgot his name, the albino guy.
Yeah.
Great ass. Every time I went back to Tom Hanks, I said, no, get back the albino with the great ass. It was much more interesting than your weird hairline.
And with the beating, did that do anything for
it
you?
It did a lot. Well, you know, it's common prey.
It's part of
your Tuesday
job.
Afternoon for me. You know, a cup of chai and some lash.
Yeah.
But I did like the thing he had on his, that little spiky spike. I don't know where you get those.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the chain mesh, the thing that...
I like it.
Yeah, maybe
it's
you can find it.
Fantastic.
You should go to some dungeon supply house or website.
Maybe. Let's call Ann Coulter. Maybe she has supplies. Anyway, the point is that I have to go, Mark, because... I have to install some solar panels for my hot water bidet.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm going environmental all the way.
That's good. And maybe a Prius. Maybe
you could... maybe not.
All right. Svetlana, mishmash.
Kisses, ease up on the blow.
Okay. It's not... All right. It's not blow, but I'll ease up on whatever it is. Thank you for being here. I love you.
I love you.
It's nice to see you. We will be back to talk about some things. Stay with us. And now he's still doing the blow, Mark Maron. I can't even imagine what that would be like. Glenn Beck has got to be stopped. Somebody's got to stop Glenn Beck.
Who's Glenn? Who are these people? Names out of
Glenn
nowhere.
Beck is a radio personality. I'm not even sure where he's out of.
Minnesota, maybe.
No, maybe Colorado. He was a radio personality, a right-wing radio personality, a syndicated radio personality who was given a show on Headline News. And I learned something, though. I watched TV for like a half hour yesterday, or 2 hours. Maybe, yeah, it was like an hour. Make up my mind. Somewhere between a half hour and 2 hours. And it's interesting to see radio personalities. Like, he is a very proficient radio personality, and now he's driving a television show. And it's weird about how humor works on the radio, how radio is much more forgiving because it's a continuous conversation, whereas television requires timing. And this guy was just sort of bloviating, outside of making an ass out of this guy's dad, this soldier, who's got some real courage. You know, there's no changing the minds of these guys. This soldier, First Lieutenant Aaron Watada, who is protesting the war, says he's not going to go. This is classic anti-war stuff. And there is really, no matter what the logic of the left is, there is no way, people like Glenn Beck or the right, they're never going to give any territory on the anti-war issue. Even if there's logic there, even if there's evidence there, they will not surrender any territory. It's what defined them. It's what defined them in Vietnam. It's what's always defined them. There is no arguing with that stubbornness to not see the truth about it.
Now, this soldier says he's not going back, or he's not going there in the first place.
No, this was a guy. He joined in earnest because he thought, he believed what George Bush was saying. He joined the Army in 2003. During the run-up to the Iraq War, and when he realized all this information comes out, how can you deny the fact that it was based on lies? And on top of that, it's an illegal war, according to the Nuremberg conference. I don't know if conference is the right word. I keep screwing that up. The Nuremberg Charter on many levels. But it would be interesting if this guy got a shot at this in court, because if you could legally prove, with international law, that this was an illegal war, symbolically it would be a great thing. I don't know if he's not going to go to jail or be court-martialed. He probably will. But it's a hell of an anti-war statement to have a living, capable American soldier say, I'm not going on legal grounds. I mean, I'm young. I'm not that aware. But in terms of what the history of this kind of thing is. But if he can get enough money to get this thing into court and get the right lawyers, it would be a hell of a symbolic case to make a point. And I hope he does. And the thing with Glenn Beck is this guy could not get the soldier to come on. So he gets his old father, who's on the Hawaii. He lives in Hawaii, and he yells at him. He basically tries to make an ass out of the guy's father mm-hmm. because the guy wouldn't make an ass out of his own son. And this guy, Glenn Beck, he's one of these dudes. He's like real cute, real chirpy, kind of young. He says he's got Ron White on. Ron White, the comic, yeah. Tater Salad, Ron Tater Salad White, who's a funny guy. Funny guy. Really, you know, out of all those guys, the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, Ron White is a real comic, great storyteller, funny guy. And he's got Ron White on there to try to make him look cuter. And they start talking about recovery, Glenn Beck's in recovery. He starts talking about Ron White. And Ron White made a delay joke right out of the gate. And Beck was just like, just kind of brushed it aside because it didn't play into his agenda. You forget sometimes that real comics, like guys who, you know, they might have one side, but they're going to take shots at everybody, mm-hmm. you know. I thought it was beautiful, but Glenn Beck is, he's got to be stopped.
Now, this is on, what, CNN?
Headline News. Let's talk to our friend here. Folks, as you may know, we recently brought back the most requested segment of the show, a fan favorite, Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week. It's something I always look forward to with a longing that verges on wistful. And now that sweet, sweet moment has arrived. Please welcome Bruce Cherry.
Thank you. Thank you for that very kind introduction, Mark.
Well, I see you haven't lost the childish delight you take in scripting these things so that all my lines reflect an almost pious veneration of your sagacity.
At least you have a well-rounded vocabulary. I don't know if that would be the case if you were left to speak your own mind, but hey, go ahead, give it a shot.
Bruce bad, Mark good. Hey, what happened to Mark? What happened?
Gee, Mark, maybe you shouldn't have stopped praising Bruce Cherry.
Bruce make me mad. Me want hurt things. Hey, can we stop this grim charade?
I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about, Mark.
It's my show. You know I don't have to play along with this. I only do it because I believe in you as an artist, because I appreciate your vision. Oh, for Christ's sake, can we just do the bit here?
Great news, Mark. Uh-huh. I did another Cedric the Ineffectual. Jokes that rely on anachronism, Monty Python British accents, the funny cup runneth over.
If I recall, this bit is a phone conversation with a fictional king of Wessex from the year mm-hmm. 750 named Cedric the Ineffectual. Cedric is a metaphor for George Bush. We call him on something called the histriophone, which is left vague enough to plaster over the holes in the logic. Hey, how come I have to do all the exposition here?
It's called airtime, Mark. Now, let's call Cedric on the histriophone and do the line that explains why somebody's picking up a phone in the year 750.
Yes, yes. Good thing this is a speakerphone. Hello, Cedric. Pick up. Pick up the object that looks like the jawbone of a stag.
Hello. Is this Mark of Marin?
Yes. How did you know?
It's the year 750. It's either you or someone trying to get me to switch histriophone providers.
750? Wow. I imagine yours must be a pretty brutal society.
Tell me about it. We're all armed to the teeth. Of course, none of us have teeth.
Let me ask you this, Cedric. How did you get to be king? Did you pull a sword out of a rock?
No. I pulled a sword out of another guy who wanted to be king. Around here, that's known as a mandate.
So, you haven't always been a king.
Oh, no. For years, I worked as a leper.
You worked as a leper? But leprosy isn't a profession. It's a disease.
Yes. Where were you when I was spending all that money on trade school? Healed College of Leprosy. What was I thinking?
Cedric, recently here we had a big controversy over gay marriage. Now, before you make a bad pun about gay as in festive merriment, let me explain. That means marriage between two people of the same sex. What are your views on marriage?
We believe marriage is a sacred institution meant to forge an alliance between warlords or to increase one's herds of pigs and cattle. Shouldn't be entered into lightly. Unless you really need the pigs.
But can a man marry another man?
How many pigs does this guy have?
Well, look, I'm not matchmaking here. Does your society approve of same-sex marriage?
We believe you should be free to marry whomever you can abduct. I don't recommend it be another man. They're much harder to tie up and throw on the back of a horse.
But you do have that option.
Yes. You have the option of the horse if you prefer.
Well, that's open-minded.
It's pragmatic. You haven't seen our women. Look, what two people do in the privacy of the communal hut is their own business.
The communal hut? I can't imagine there would be any privacy at all.
No, so whatever you do, do it with some flair. Tell me, Mark of Marin, what do you do for a living?
Well, it's hard to explain. I guess it's my job to keep people amused.
Really? You're a dwarf?
No.
A hunchback?
No.
A hunchback dwarf?
No, no, I'm just an entertainer.
Oh, not a very good one, I take it. No hunchback, indeed.
Look, I'll ask my agent about getting a hunchback.
You have an agent? Mm. Listen, I'm a king now, but I've been writing an epic poem.
Oh, yeah. Well, my agent isn't taking new clients.
No. It's a great story. Think Beowulf meets Tristan und Isolde.
I gotta go. I'm out of histriophone minutes.
Click and scene. What do you think?
Just brilliant. Just brilliant. A triumph. I almost split a glove clapping.
Oh.
You know, Bruce, if this isn't a pitch of the week, you don't really need to write any ending banter.
Oh, okay, great. See you next time.
Yes, you will, Bruce. Yes, you will. Now get out. Look, folks. Jim.
That was, you know, just like, I...
Look at this.
Utterly confusing again. I don't know why you let him...
Ramble on?
Ramble on and then make, you know, fool of you like that.
Because it's good funny. I am a very humble guy. I've got a big heart and I'm capable of being... I am no problem being the brunt of a joke as long as I know it's coming. Remember what Harry Shearer said. Remember the words of wisdom from the sage like Harry Shearer. The reason we're comics is so we can try to control why people laugh at us. Okay? Remember that. Remember that, little man. Write it down. Do whatever you got to do.
I guess that's one of the reasons. I don't think that's the only reason.
I got the chills, man. Hey, here's some good news. The Senate fails to attempt to repeal the estate tax. Remember we talked to Henry Waxman?
Oh, yes.
Doesn't look like it's going to happen. It's going to run out on its own in 2010 and then return in 2011. They're still going to try to make a compromise, but right now... that money is not going to go. The trillions of dollars over 10 years of time, the billions of dollars over 10 years' time is not going to go into the coffers of the wealthy to evade their civic duty. It will go into perhaps the Medicare pool or perhaps Social Security or perhaps something to help other people, to give a little back.
Damn, I'll need that in 10 years.
God forbid they give a little something back. Am I right? You know what? I got a question, and you can answer this. You know how the American media is so... weird about showing violence or always blaming the liberals for, you know, festering about the negative, for getting all upset about the Haditha massacre, Abu Ghraib, and how we always see a negative and how it's just grim and they keep painting it grim. And we have a president that will not go to military funerals and tries to hide caskets. And yet, as soon as they kill Zarqawi, they might as well make T-shirts with that guy's dead head on him. I mean, what the hell? I mean, everywhere. That guy's dead head is everywhere. They brought it to the press conference. Zarqawi's dead head at the military press conference to prove that he's dead. So when it's to serve their own purposes, they don't mind getting grim and ugly and weird. And this guy, Glenn Beck, you want to hear what else makes him a contemptible ass?
What?
He's on TV, watching a TV of the footage, the on-plane video of the two bombs.
The actual bombing, yeah.
And he's got soul music playing, and he's going, oh, yeah, baby. That is the sexiest video I've ever seen in my life. How can that guy do what? But, you know, he thought it was cute, but it's pathological. It is pathological.
Well, Anderson Cooper had kind of the same thing. He had a tape loop of that footage going over and over and over again for every video transition, every cut to another correspondent or something. They'd show that again with special animation and some fanfare behind it.
Really?
Cool. Yeah. I mean, CNN is a horror as well. Anderson Cooper,
Glenn Beck is on Headline News. It's the same company.
Anderson Cooper is a friggin' little, whore himself.
But he's a cute, rich, sort of sad-eyed whore.
Yeah, he's very sensitive. Very sensitive guy who
was
in New Orleans. Yeah,
he's a Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I know.
He's a Vanderbilt.
I know he is.
Man, that's not just a little money, my friend.
There's a lot of money, and he can, you know.
They own Grand Central Station, bro.
But it doesn't matter how much money you have. You still want to whore yourself for some reason.
Yeah, it is an interesting thing. I haven't felt whorey lately, and I'm happy about that. I really haven't. Like, what have I got coming up? I'm going to host the Southern Los Angeles press conference. I'm going to do a section of hosting on that. Press dinner, where they're honoring Larry King. It's like a local press dinner.
Is Larry King going to be there?
Yeah, but I think I'm going to be going on later in the program. He's going to be leaving. I got myself, I told you yesterday, and I didn't mean to, I was excited. I'm not going to jinx it.
No, go ahead. You can't do that. You can't set something like that up and disappoint the blogger.
No, I'm going to do another Comedy Central Presents in August, as far as I know. But you know what? I'll tell you. The bloggers, that's a half-hour special on Comedy Central I'm thrilled about, because the first one I did it with the first round of them. They hadn't worked out the kinks, and I hadn't worked out the kinks. I wasn't even sober then. It wasn't a disaster, but it was. It could have been a much better. I'm just happy I'm going to get another opportunity. But so where was I going with
that? It wasn't your core audience, I hear.
Oh, the Samoan teenagers?
Yeah.
They bust in, these teenagers. It was weird. I'm waiting to go on. It's at a theater over here on Vine. I guess the Pantages, or I can't remember which one. One of the theaters, the performance theaters on Vine. And I'm in the parking lot, and three or four school buses pull up, and Samoan teenagers come out. And that means that they were really desperate for an audience, because they had to fly them in from Samoa and bring them to the show.
That's a lot of moo-moos.
But I'll tell you, it was the same series that Mitch Hedberg taped on the same night as I did.
Killed, right?
No. No, he didn't kill, but his performance, Mitch was always very good at not caring whether he killed or not. Mitch was in his own world, but his performance became seminal. It was really the one that made him. Me, no one remembers. Black suit, bad haircut.
Now you have another chance to prove yourself.
I hope so. My God. So we'll be back with some closing thoughts, short order news, tell you who's on the show next week, that kind of stuff.
If you really believe Mark Maron is the one and true Christ, you won't want to miss his short order news coming up next. Amen.
I don't have any more ideas for this. Mark Maron!
Really? Well, that better not be prescient. You understand what I'm saying?
Prescient?
Prescient.
Prescient?
What does it mean? Tell me, and I'll see if I used it right.
In this context, I don't know what it means.
Like foreshadowing. Isn't that what it means?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, apparently. See, that's what I was going to say before we went on the break about my Comedy Central special, is that the bloggers and my regular listeners, they take everything I may be doing with a grain of salt, because, as you know, we were supposed to be syndicated. Have not heard yet about what's going on. They're restructuring, reorganizing, making some changes at Air America headquarters. So next week we should know what the hell is going on. And that's for real. I was making an ass of myself. I was sending people emails. I was putting it on the blog. Here we're any day now. We moved to the studio. It's in the can at 4:00. We're going up on the satellite. Nope. Not yet. But we find out. It's going to be But, you know, even that, I'm like, yeah, okay, are we? Are we going to find out? I don't know.
You know, this may go on this may be our hell. Week after week after week.
I don't have any more room for another hell. I have two or three going already.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's booking those hells?
Yeah, I can hook you up with the guy. You want his number? I don't know if he'll take your call. Do you have a package?
Yeah, I got a package, but I just, have to print it up again.
All right. Well, look,
man, it's so annoying, isn't it? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's your show,
too. All right, go ahead.
What's annoying?
Yeah, you're just printing up a package.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what to put in the package. You know, it's a year or two old, but nobody else has seen it. Why should that matter to me? It doesn't matter. It does matter.
Look, you're overthinking it. You just got to get the funny stuff. Look at the stuff. Try and be objective. This is funny. And get on with it. You know, write some topical jokes. You've got jokes to draw from the stuff you've written here. Do a page of those. Put 10 of those on there. 2 sketch ideas, and you're done already. Enough already.
Sketch ideas, but they always want a sitcom. Sitcom?
No. You want to get a job. You know, if this doesn't pan out, you want to get a job writing on a variety show, like the Showbiz Show or something. Maybe Mencia might need a writer.
Who?
Yeah, you'd write on his show if you got the
gig. I'd write it long enough to get fired.
Next week on the show, Paul F. Tompkins, funny guy. Lawrence Kasdan, my friends, the guy who wrote one of the Star Wars movie and the seminal Yuppie film, which is a great film, The Big Chill. Love it. I do. I'm going to admit it. I like The Big Chill. I remember when it came out, I was a big William Hurt fan. Liked the movie. Accidental Tourist, Body Heat, one of the great contemporary interpretations of the noir genre.
Oh,
but he produced The Inconvenient Truth. Can I get a little
sure, Terry Gross.
I made Terry uncomfortable, but not as uncomfortable as Gene Simmons did. So let's get into this. This is the second version of the Mark Maron Show Short Order News. So you're informed. I'm going to use this joke twice. It's just too damn funny, Jim. Governor Rick Perry of Texas has announced a $5 million plan to install hundreds of live video night vision internet cameras on private land along the Mexican border so that anyone with a computer who spots illegal immigrants trying to slip across can report it on a toll-free hotline. The website is not expected to do well because the immigrants are running so fast you can't masturbate to them. Can't lose with that, huh? All right, no meta. The site of Adolf Hitler's bunker was marked publicly for the first time Thursday by a historical group. Many Nazis, I mean Germans, sorry, were hesitant to make the location a landmark because they were afraid the site would become a pilgrimage. So far, however, the former bunker has become a place to give your girlfriend cyanide before shooting yourself in the head.
Look, don't forget your dog.
Yeah. A woman eating at a Burger King restaurant in The Hague, Netherlands, found a live frog in her salad. The woman is not expected to sue the restaurant. Suits seeking emotional damages are almost unheard of in the Netherlands because that would entail having to show an emotion. They're a little cold, the people from the Netherlands. I worked with a guy. Remember Larson?
Mm-hmm.
John Larson?
Yeah.
Scandinavian. Isn't that the Netherlands?
No, it's got nothing to do with the Netherlands.
It doesn't?
I do not understand that joke. I must officially protest that joke.
I hate when I look stupid. So what is the Netherlands? Is the Netherlands Holland? It is.
It
right?
is Holland.
But it doesn't include a few countries? It's not like Holland?
No, it used to include Belgium.
Okay.
Belgium and the Netherlands.
So it's pretty
Belgium
specific.
Belgium is even yeah, I think souther than Scandinavia.
That would have been funnier if it was Sweden. That would have worked a little more.
I guess
so. You know, I should really learn geography before I choose to open my mouth with a joke.
Nah.
Hey, have a good weekend. I'm going to be trying to kick this bird flu. All right? Have fun, Jim. Good night, Sheeple.
I'll be around.
All right.